Welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship Sunday services. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry. I use the pronouns she and her, and it is my delight to serve this warm and committed congregation. Everyone is welcome to this service. Our faith honors the value of every person, as well as the relationships that weave all of us and all of existence into a connected web. That means that you are welcome here with your broken heart, your irritable words, and your tired body. You are welcome here with your love, your gratitude, and your dreams of building a caring world. Please join us in coffee hour on Zoom at 11:30. This is a really important way that we stay connected as a community as we continue to shelter at home. We share joys and sorrows, and we check in with each other. The link is in your order of service. We welcome visitors to our services. Our community is welcoming and caring. And if you would like to receive our email or be more active in our now virtual community, please email our administrator. It's on the page in front of me as well as on our website. WOLF has many ways to stay connected during this time. Please check the announcements that came in your order of service. Our candle kindling is from John Shar. The future is not some place we are going, but one we are creating. The paths are not to be found, but made. And the activity of making them changes both the maker and the destination. Spirit of life and love, we enter this Memorial Day grateful for all the people who are currently serving in the armed forces, and we pray for their safe return to their families and their communities. We grieve the passing of those who will never return to us. We honor their service and their sacrifice. We remember the nearly 100,000 Americans who have died from COVID-19 in the last 3 months, and the nearly 350,000 who have died across the world. We remember those who have died at greater rates of other illnesses since they have not had access to medical care. We remember those we have loved and lost. We hold their names and their faces in our minds. Let us recall the gifts they have given to us. Through the strength of their being, the depth of their love, and the fullness of their living. Take a moment now and speak the names of those who you have known and loved, who have sacrificed themselves for this country. And speak the names of those you know who have lost their lives to COVID-19. And speak the names of those beloved who have been lost to you, but are never lost in the love of your heart. We will now spend time in silence and meditation and prayer, as is your tradition.
Hello, I'm Brad Hewitt, and it's my privilege to be your lay leader this morning. Our first reading today is by Rebecca Solnit. Disasters test regimes. Some fail the test. Incompetence, indifference, and self-interest are easy to see in the stark light of an emergency. People whose lives have been thrown into turmoil are no longer cautious or deferential, and no longer accept the inevitability of a status quo that is already in disarray. And our second reading today is by Liz James. I'm not sure those townspeople were being selfish in this stone soup story. You probably remember how it goes. When the old woman came into the village and asked for ingredients to make food, everyone said they had nothing. She began boiling a pot of water with a stone in it, and she said, "Oh, I wish I had a little salt." And someone came forward, shyly, with a tiny bit tucked away in a pocket. Then she wondered out loud if she could find a few root vegetables, and another person had that. Someone else had a few spoonfuls of rice, and so on, until a glorious soup was made. We're taught that this tale is about tricking a meal out of selfish people. But I don't really think that's what happened. I mean, if someone asked me if I had a meal to share with them, and I only had a half teaspoon of salt or a few old vegetables that are always in the back of my fridge, I would say I couldn't help. I wouldn't be lying when I said I had nothing to give. I'd just be wrong. When we say that there's nothing you can do, and we can do, we're not lying. That phone call we might make, that $5 we might donate, that quick email of encouragement we might send, these things feel so small that we think that they're the same as having nothing to offer. The stone soup story isn't about selfish people. It's about people who thought they were powerless. It's about people learning that they had something to offer that would feed themselves and each other.
My daughter makes slime. She makes several batches of slime a day. When she is with me, slime covers most of the flat surfaces in my small condo. When she is not with me, there is a big box of slime and slime-making products that overflow onto the floor near my kitchen table. The table itself is covered in splotches of glue, hardened slime, and patches of dishwashing liquid mixed with glue, which is the worst. Cleaning this up is a long process of leaving wet cloth over the goo for a while and then wiping it up as it loosens. You might think that I don't like slime after months of this, but actually I do. If you've never made slime, you mix water, glue, and borax, and as you mix it, this solid, stretchy stuff forms out of the liquid. It's kind of magical. Water, glue, and a little white powder, and liquid becomes solid. Slime can be stretchy or thick and easily break like putty. It can be opaque or clear or green or glittery. It's creative. It's always different, but always the same, since suddenly solid just appears out of liquid. I conceptualized this sermon as a happy one. I wanted to tell stories of the way activists are working to bring progressive ideas, ideas that would help create a more caring, sustainable world into being. I imagined three heartwarming stories about the work that is being done and how we could be a part of it. It would be an incredibly hopeful sermon. I started my thinking with two quotes by public intellectuals that I decided to interpret as positively as possible. The first is from Rebecca Solnit, who wrote today's reading. "Disasters test regimes. Some fail the test. Incompetence, indifference, and self-interest are easy to see in the stark light of an emergency. People whose lives have been thrown into turmoil are no longer cautious or deferential, and no longer accept the inevitability of a status quo that is already in disarray." Milton Friedman wrote in 1982, "Only a crisis, actual or perceived, produces real change. When the crisis occurs, the actions that are taken depend on the ideas that are lying around." We are in the middle of a very big crisis. We are nearly 3 months into this in the United States, and the numbers of dead and infected keep climbing, even though it seems clear we are over the first peak. Whether this will be the only peak or one of many is something we just have to wait and find out. The trick is ensuring each infected person infects less than one other person. Will all the precautions, as we allow more and more public activities, be enough to do that? Certainly, that is what public officials are hoping. Epidemiologists aren't quite as convinced. We just don't know, though. That is the thing about the future. You can't know it until you get there. What is true is that opening up isn't going to be much like life before COVID-19, and it's hard to know when it ever will be like that again. The devastation to the economy and people's confidence in public life will likely be wounded for a very long time. Right now, people are afraid of common spaces, of touching, of breathing near each other. How long can we do that before it becomes ingrained? In a year or two, will we flinch when someone comes closer than 6 feet? Will some people choose never to sing in church or go to a concert over the fear of getting sick? The tech giants have ideas lying around, and they are beginning to plan the infrastructure that will allow us all to live lives in isolation. They imagine a reality where we have never have to leave our houses again, but continue to live in front of better screens with better infrastructure, creating a completely no-touch, no-gather society. Margaret Atwood, who is well known for The Handmaid's Tale, wrote another dystopia series that I found even more chilling. I have been reminded of the first book in that trilogy, Oryx and Crake, lately. In the book, the upper classes live in enclaves with walls, and all that they have and need is delivered to them. The rest of the people live in extreme poverty in squalid cities that are dangerous and full of disease. With essential workers, the majority poor and people of color, living very different existences in this pandemic than everyone else, I think of Atwood's world. I wonder, will certain subsets of privileged people choose even more productive lives after this pandemic? Buying better and better screens and interfaces and having everything necessary delivered. Will we all become afraid of each other? Since loneliness is a higher predictor of early death than obesity or smoking, that version of a new life sounds terrifying. But fear can make us do things we might not ordinarily do. The economy, based on the incessant production and purchase of things and activities, has slowed dramatically across the world. Our current administration has ideas lying around. Stop immigration and dramatically deregulate, they say. They are using COVID-19 to create a more perfect neoliberal world where the privileged become wealthier and poor people lead even more difficult lives. Immigration has stopped. Deportations have increased. Deregulation is increasing. These changes are necessary to get people back to work, the administration says. It doesn't matter if the regulations support the environment, health, and workers. So what about those three happy stories I went out seeking? Those three stories that would demonstrate the work that was being done to cross the threshold from the cold, using selfishness of neoliberalism to a more caring society with safety nets and sustainability at its center. Where were those stories demonstrating progressive ideas coming into form? Well, they simply didn't appear the way I wanted them to. Instead, it was a cold slog through magazines and newspapers and progressive websites. What I found were filaments and nuggets of promise. That was all. Since presidential hopeful Andrew Yang campaigned on a universal basic income, the concept is more out in the world of ideas, and the $1,200 payments in the early coronavirus support were loosely based on that. Since the pandemic, opinion writers in a wide range of publications are now discussing the pros and cons of such a possibility. More people are interested in it. In a national poll just in April, the majority of Americans, 66%, supported regular financial payments to individuals throughout the economic crisis. This included 77% of Democrats and 52% of Republicans. The idea of single-payer health care has been around for decades and once again was beaten down during the Democratic presidential debates. However, since the pandemic, more Americans than ever support it, as many as 70% in one poll. In another poll, just 55% supported it, but that was a 9% increase from their previous pre-pandemic poll. The fact that we don't have a healthcare system, but instead a broken patchwork of for-profit healthcare delivery methods, has never been more clear to the general public. Neither has the ways that everyone else's access to healthcare affects everyone else's health. Paid sick leave has been an idea lying around, and one with 85% voter approval since before the pandemic. Now 95% of Americans support paid sick leave. And now they're actually predicting it will become an issue for voters in November. Labor protests are on the rise for the first time in decades. That is certainly an idea that just hasn't been lying around, but one that has worked in this country. People whose lives have been thrown into turmoil are no longer cautious or deferential, says Solnit. Essential workers across the U.S. and the world are walking out of work, demanding hazard pay, protective equipment, paid sick leave, and health care. People dependent on essential workers for their daily well-being, which is all of it, it turns out, are taking a pause, suddenly noticing, as if for the first time, the dire working conditions of those who we need the most. These filaments are not the robust stories I had hoped for. I wanted something more filled out, that looked like a movement, like something that could possibly happen. I went seeking stories of crossed thresholds, and what I found were some shifts in attitudes and actions. I found some ideas lying around. I found possibilities. But you never know if ideas lying around will get picked up, and possibilities are very fragile. Whether an idea or a possibility becomes something solid depends on activation. Slime is made when borax activates glue. It's a chemical reaction. If you don't have borax, you don't have slime. You just have glue and water. Energy and attention activate an idea or a possibility into something solid. You can take that and cross a threshold on a journey to transform our lives and society. It turns out also that you can stop that slime-borax reaction. You do it by adding, oddly, toothpaste. There is a lot of activation-stopping toothpaste in our society when it comes to making a more caring world possible. Money and power are fighting against Medicaid for all, and regulations that would require paid sick leave and safe working environments, even though those are things the majority of Americans want. Hospitals and companies are hiring union busters. The administration is rolling back protections for workers. In some states, workers have been told if they don't go to work, even in dangerous working conditions, they will lose unemployment. These situations require even more activation to stay on target, to turn ideas and possibilities into movements that become policies and lived experiences. It's people power that activates possibilities and ideas that could solidify into a caring society. And that is true. People change things. But it is so easy not to believe in our power. We can feel like those villagers in stone soup, as if we have nothing to offer, that all we have is a quarter teaspoon of salt or a potato going soft, and that is just useless. We wait for someone with charisma and power like Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren or Joe Biden or Stacey Abrams to pick up the ideas lying around and to activate them. Doing that is giving the power we do have away. People. Lots and lots of people who say, we actually do want single-payer health care or paid sick leave or worker protection, and tell their elected officials to pick up those ideas lying around or they will be voted out of office, is stronger than money or corporate power. It is the ultimate power. And we have to use it. Unfortunately, it doesn't feel like much when we use it. It feels like offering our dehydrated carrot to the pot of soup. It's nothing. However, it is our letters, phone calls, donations, discussions with friends, shared news articles that builds the activation power that makes possibilities and ideas lying around become solid and livable. Our carrot, as pathetic as it might seem in our refrigerator, does give the pot of soup more power to feed the hungry. It creates uncertainty and chaos. We can't know what is going to happen. That is the horror of it and the wonder of it. What we do now matters. Our actions activate the ideas and possibilities that will form in chaos, making solid the world that we want. Remember that together we are powerful. This community, in partnership with all the other people who want a caring world, can create movements so that one day, sometime, next year or the year after, I can write that happy sermon with the three stories that show we are on the threshold of building the world we dream of. Remember, life is always calling us on.
As we prepare to gratefully give and receive our offering, to offer other gifts, please join the discussion online and contact our fellowship via email, web, or phone to get involved. We are reminded that love is the currency of our community. Love that built the fires we are warmed by today. Love planted the trees that shade us. WIF exists because of the generous spirit and commitment of those who came before, as our future health depends on the dedication and commitment of those of us here now. Perhaps you will show your love with a monetary offering, or you will consider other gifts that you have to offer. We are grateful for them all.
Our benediction is from the Reverend Sarah Lawal. When the pull to disappear takes hold with all its harsh realities, may we conjure up that fierce love to bring our hopeful vision into being, discovering the humanity, bravery, goodness still calling us forth. May we breathe into that story and make it come alive.